Guten Abend. Guten Nacht. Jeff Bennett here. On an unusual Wednesday night. Many of you tune in on Wednesday nights for our health-related programming. Tonight, it's a different kind of health. It's a wake-up for mental health. We speak tonight of America's parallel with events which began in 1930s Germany and resulted in a meteoric rise of a right-wing group that eventually became the Nazi Party. But you see, my friends, in America today, it's not the Nazis that worry me. It is the licentious left that is most worrisome. America's takeover by left-wing socialists and the impending financial collapse they cause will destroy this nation. The parallel to 1930s Germany is unmistakable and undeniable. History, you see, chronicles Germany's incredible saga of irrevocable decisions, political promises, financial collapse, and well-planned power plays. It was known as the Third Reich. The First Reich was the German Empire. The second was the Weimar Republic. And the final and Third Reich was Nazi Germany, Hitler's thousand-year federation. Germany's demise and the subsequent rise of the National Socialist Workers' Party, or the Nazi Party, resulted from a financial collapse caused by enormous debt from funding the government and World War I. Does all this begin to sound familiar to you? Let's address World War I, the financial costs. Just in a matter of four short years, from 1914 to 1918, the Allies, Britain, and its empire spent $47 billion. America spent $27 billion. Germany itself spent $45 billion, and that debt was so crushing that it took 92 years to pay it off. As a note, the Allied armies of World War II from 1939 to 1945 and America's involvement from 41 to 45 was the most expensive war in history, lasting fewer than 4 years for America and adjusted for inflation in today's money over $4 trillion. Over the years, we've used the Nazi analogy many times in the past, and yet it becomes more weighty as the days pass and America's flood of foolishness metastasizes politically. And since one side controls the system, they use their advantage to evade constitutionally formalities and do whatever suits the cult's purpose. This, we can do whatever we want, and you cannot stop us. That kind of an attitude should terrify Americans. Unfortunately, there's nothing to stop them at this point. They use the Constitution as a mere doormat. Democrat, socialist, or demo socks dominate America's multi-party political system. And yes, the Republican Party controls the House of Representatives, but they're all bark. Think of the right, the Republicans, as a toothless Rottweiler. Lots of ferocious noise, but little deterrence, i.e., no bite. And because of it, Americans are being played like a cheap kazoo. Our unbiased sympathy and desire to prove our open-mindedness and sophistication entice us to elect one of America's most corrupt politicians to the presidency. And of course, the biased mainstream media mafia played a crucial role in that election. Number 44 was a divider who did more vindictive damage to this country than anyone before. Obama was instrumental in moving America to the brink of socialism and training his ventriloquist dummy vice president, another professional politician, to continue his quest. And in addition, number 44 single-handedly undid 100 years of civil rights gains by reintroducing retaliatory racial divisiveness during his 8-year reign. In popular opinion and obvious policy choices suggest that 44 and his wife are still running this country, and she has presidential aspirations. Just what we need, another dick in the White House. The word dynasty, my friends, comes to mind considering that number 46's policies continue 44's regime, and Mrs. Number 44 as leader of the free world is quite frightening. But keep in mind, the free world is merely an oxymoron. We joke that an oxymoron is a big, clumsy, stupid person, but in this case, an incongruous, seemingly contradictory satire. Did I do that intentionally? My friends, the world is anything but free. What about the term cross the Rubicon? Does it mean anything to you? That phrase has recently been a frequent visitor to media presentations. We sincerely wonder if these talking heads comprehend the connotation of this statement, or if, like everything they spew, it's all just scripted, programmed, and regurgitated media political babble or bullshit. To paraphrase, cross the Rubicon refers to Caesar's point of no return and the irreversible decision to begin the civil war on Rome that would eventually end the Roman Republic. Caesar reportedly uttered, "The die is cast," as he crossed the river. If that phrase is unclear, I encourage you to read the story yourself. For my friends, we have crossed the Rubicon. There are no markers to lead us back to the beginning. There's too much debris on the path from recent decisions. We were so arrogant, we didn't bother to consider the consequences of our choices or their impact. That is an inherent flaw in our approach to this republic. And dare I suggest, our lives in general. For we act without thinking critically. We wade into the river, never considering that strong undercurrents or predators may lurk. There's a chasm in America wider than the Grand Canyon and deeper than the Mariana Trench, which splits this republic along political cult lines. Their ensuing power struggle has torn America apart. In 1865, the division then was North and South, before the War of Northern Aggression. Today, the division is ideological, but not so geographically bound, although it does appear to be liberal coastal elites versus conservative middle America. The conservatives against the liberals is our uncivil civil war. So calling it uncivil is more appropriate, since there is nothing civil about war. After all, the intent is to vanquish your opponent at all costs. The Democrats and Republicans fight in the political arena of merely the mind. Each cult has advantages and disadvantages, points of good and evil, as it were. Sadly, our republic is both the battleground and the casualty. Oh, either party may gain, but the loser, ultimately, is the republic, the people, who will ultimately lose and bear the entire cost. Whatever happened to compromise as a possible solution? Unfortunately, the two main combatants won't be satisfied until the other is annihilated. Now, one group, the right, favors a constitutional approach to big government. And the alternative side, the left, leans toward socialism. They are diametric and incongruous ideologies. We libertarians want minor intervention from a fiscal responsible administration that follows the Constitution. Well, citizens, dear listeners, the die was cast with the indictment of number 45. The left has weaponized the media, big tech, and the government to persecute and prosecute number 45 and any other political opponent. The official malady is Trump derangement syndrome, TDS, an all-consuming hatred for everything Trump and merely the latest tool in the left's arsenal to vanquish all conservative ideals, much like the Gestapo of the 1930s who persecuted the Jews and the non-Aryans. Number 46 referred to the right as enemies of the state and the ultra, uber, super, duper. The Make America Great Again adherents as domestic terrorists, as a threat to and intent on destroying democracy. Regardless of your personal view of number 45, the damage done by TDS to our republic is irreparable. That is our Rubicon, my friends. The left has drug us into the river, and they intend to cross come hell or high water. So much for a representative republic. Lavrentiy Beria, the most ruthless and longest-serving secret police chief in Stalin's reign of terror in Russia and Eastern Europe, said, "Show me the man, and I'll show you the crime." It is precisely what we have in this case against 45. The New York City DA, Alvin Bragg, not of Alvin and the Chipmunks fame, campaigned on getting number 45 at all costs. And this guy is turning more criminals loose out of the prison system in New York than you can possibly believe. The precedent that this indictment sets has far-reaching implications locally and worldwide. When third world countries remark that America has lost its right to act as the world's democratic and moral leader. You know, the poop has hit the fan when a banana republic's president references our backsliding democracy as hypocritical. In just over 2 years, America has lost its status as the most powerful nation in the world and the world economic leader. We're no longer the world's moral and financial example, or one of the last surviving functional democratic republics. Denmark, Norway, and Finland are doing better than the good old U.S. of A., but unfortunately, we're no better than the banana republics we continually condemn. Now, friends, we owe a rousing standing ovation to the democratic socialists for this monumental fiasco and our Republican comrades who slept through the warning events. But where are the government watchdogs, those who should have prevented all of this? Oh, that's right. We used to have a constitution to guide us and prevent appropriation and expropriation, but it now lies at the bottom of the presidential parrot cage, getting crapped upon on a momentary basis. We are Tarfu. Clandestine tactics are now overt. They're in your face. The demo sucks have their own cult of fervent believers and join with the TDS's cult's rabid followers. We poor independents remain in the middle. We lament the death of our constitutional republic. That is the predicament created by two-party politics and no liability for their actions. Democracy is a curious ideology, my friends, for it leads adherents to believe it's the only viable dogma in any transgression, even violence on its behalf, all of which is perfectly acceptable in the name of free speech and expression. Anything and everything for the cause. And that is what has brought us to the Rubicon. Democracy is a building exercise in Iraqistan. Iraqistan is my illusory combination of Iraq and Afghanistan, but since that area is still the focus of our proselytizing the Muslim world to democracy, we'll just include the entire region. I think Iraqistan has a nice ring. And since most of the world's countries insist they are quasi-democratic, it stands to reason that America was the shepherd of this scattered flock, seeking to reunite them into one big happy family, with America as patriarch. But sadly, these sheep are fully aware of our duplicity and recognize that aid money does not buy friendship nor allegiance. It adds them to our list of dependents. They don't want anything we have except our money. And that's our folly in the Iraqistan region. Both diplomacy is, or big diplomacy is, irrational and ill-conceived. If America is foolish enough to send them money, then who's the fool? The sender? Or the one who accepts it? What did we expect in return? Outright fealty? How many other parts of the world are we going to continue to send money to? Money that we don't have. Do we expect these folks to abandon the millennia of their religious and dynastic rule for a few billion dollars and become the model Christians that America professes to be? Our leadership example is, to put it mildly, pretty friggin' poor. People are not blind. They can see through our pretense and our charade of propriety. Our war on terror cost America $8 trillion. The Iraqistan war contributed $2.313 trillion to that total. Oh, we sent them $1.1 billion in humanitarian aid because we bombed them. And we're now paying them for the opportunity and the privilege. That does not include, according to the demo sucks, the $7 billion in equipment for the Taliban. Of course, Republicans claim it was $85 billion. You didn't actually expect them to agree, did you? But regardless of all of this, my friends, the haphazard coitus interruptus in Iraqistan was a momentous step backward in diplomatic strategy. Democratization and conversion of Muslims and Islamists to Buddhism or Bidenism would have to wait for the next colonialization window. Maybe more money would grease the skids a little. You see, historically, America's made some real boneheaded blunders in the past. But this lapse of reason is calculable and inexcusable. And yet here we are, sucking up to that entire region for oil while number 46 avows that he will end America's use of fossil fuel in favor of sustainable power sources. What the over? Yesterday on the air, I made the comment that our gas prices had gone up a couple days ago. And we were at $4.79 a gallon. This is for regular gas in the Phoenix area. There was a long time when different brands of people selling gas might be 5 to 10 cents difference between the two of them, or three of them, or five of them. The only oddball is Arco. They're weird. Last night I had to go out with my granddaughter. Gas hit $4.99 yesterday. That's $5 a gallon. And when I went by the Chevron station this morning, when everyone else is at that $4.99, Chevron is at $4.19.9. I'm sorry, $5.19.9. And they want us all to run out and buy EVs, electric vehicles. It's sickening. While our humanitarian efforts are paying no dividends in Iraqistan, by the way, the right is bleeding from the left's beatings to improve morale by transitioning to socialism. Oh, nothing unifies citizens better than calling half of them traitors and domestic terrorists. Back to the beginning. A superpower in the 1930s, Germany crumbled under the financial pressure of supporting the government and its wars. America, my friends, is no different. We're reeling from unchecked government spending. Budget estimates for next year top $7 trillion. And there's no indication of serious efforts to reduce the grip of the military-industrial congressional complex's hold upon the purse strings. Do you see and recognize and understand the parallels? We've crossed the Rubicon, fiscally and morally. The demos sucks have co-opted and corrupted our government by legislating away the basic precepts of our Constitution, interfering with the state's voting laws, spending us into receivership. They've weaponized two of the three departments of our government, and they are working to change the dynamics of the third. But you see, it's not just the demos sucks. The Republicans are on a power crusade of their own. Congress, the opposite of progress, as it were, is feckless. They're mired in self-serving partisan arguments that ignore those who elected them. There's no constituency representation, only the symbiotic relationship with their donors. Election tampering? Oh my goodness, I shouldn't make that statement online because Fox News just had to fork out God knows how many millions of dollars because of their claim of election tampering on television. Well, come after me, you bastards, because I really don't care. Election tampering, influence peddling, weaponized government agencies, runaway spending, a failing economy, bank closures, rampant inflation. All of these things ride on top of unemployment and government insolvency and inefficiencies. We are the mirror of the 1930s Germany. Once the next step will be the actual insurrection that the Biden Reich hopes to incite. Continuing TDS. If the demos sucks can goad the right into a civil uprising or conflict, they can declare martial law and the coup d'etat will be complete. Are we the generation that will fulfill Ronald Reagan's prediction? Reagan once stated that freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction. We did not pass it to our children in the bloodstream. It must be fought for and protected and handed on for them to do the same. Or one day we will spend our sunset years telling our children and our children's children what it was once like in the United States, where men were free. Commentary, Charles R. Dickens. It's amazing to me how history always finds a way of repeating itself. It is profound. I sit there just weeks away from starting my 29th year in the air, and I want to vomit with all of this. Stay with us. We'll be back in just a few moments. Hold on. anything about America's decline? No, the remedies are agreed upon, but the needed medicine is feared more than the disease. Because today, the government is the cause of our many crises. 21st century America was on a trajectory of gradual decline until it began to implode, my friends. Was the accelerant the COVID-19 pandemic and the unhinged lockdowns? Or was the catalyst the woke revolution fueled by the 2020 summer of exempted rioting and looting and arson and violence? Or maybe it was perhaps the deranged fixation on removing Donald Trump from the presidency and destroying the rule of law in the process. Or all of that and more. And now with the election of Joey, what had been a fast-track decline has accelerated at such an astonishing rate we can scarcely recognize our nation anymore. Our largest cities are being uninhabitable, dilapidated, dangerous, dysfunctional. The challenge is not just rampant crime, but the realization that if you, the citizen, are stabbed or shot or beaten up on the street, the perpetrators may well be exempt from most punishments. And the victim either will be forgotten in his misery or indeed blamed for bringing such violence upon himself. Urban schools, they're not such places of instruction any longer. The fact is, accepted by teachers' unions whose operative principles seems to be that the more hopeless the idea of education urban youth is understood to be, the less burdensome the workload and the greater their hazardous duty pay. Urban chain stores are closing down on the principle that if police cannot or will not stop consumer violence and theft, then consumers there should not have any store to buy anything anyway. So if there is no store, how can it be looted or shoplifted? It is interesting. I drove by to go to the Dollar General store last night in my neighborhood, and it was closed. No, not out of business yet. They just had a couple of handwritten, scribbled paper signs taped to the windows saying that they were closed. I drove by there today. They've not been taken down. In our particular local Dollar General store, it seems that all their employees happen to be of the Negroid persuasion. I don't knock that. But the fact is that the people that have been there for quite some time have all left. And the other folks just don't want to work. We're reading more and more stories every day about restaurants, about Walmarts, other well-known stores that are shutting down massively all over the country because the court system and the legal system continue to allow the theft and the robbery. Enough is enough. They're shutting the stores down. And the only mystery remaining is how long these Democrat-controlled, racially charged, and corrupt municipalities can sustain their budgets and their pension commitments with increasingly declining revenue. Oh, one can tax the well-off, and perhaps even gouge them as California does, but one cannot insult and ridicule them in the process. Being highly taxed is one thing. Being highly taxed while hated is quite another. How eerie that medievalism, defecting, urinating, fornicating, all injecting in the street. It's been relabeled as homelessness, as if the problem is merely a shortage of apartments or tent cities. Somehow cities developed the notion that it was crueler to be told not to pull down one's pants and defecate on the street than it was for a pedestrian to step into infectious human excrement. My friends, in the next 5 years, either cities will seek new governance to reduce their taxes and break up municipal unions, mandate charter schools, restore police funding and manpower, recalibrate the pensions, prosecute the criminals and corrupt officials, or Los Angeles and Frisco and Seattle and Portland and Minneapolis and scores of other cities will become just like Detroit. One of the strangest phenomena amid our current debility are the millions of affluent leftists and liberals who have fled their unworkable, now unlivable, blue-run, but naturally beautiful cities like Frisco or Portland. They seem to lack an abstract recognition of why they're leaving, or why and how their new chosen destinations are so different and therefore so inviting to them. Has their motto become, I am fleeting what I created, but I still hate those who created what I want? And what about the border problem? Come on. To have a border problem, one must have a border. The United States no longer has a southern border. At least 7 million illegal entries since the Biden inauguration are proof enough of that tragedy. Mexico brags that 40 million have come into the United States, and it urges them to vote Democratic, and it relies on still more illegal entries to ensure yearly increases in its current $60 billion in remittance income sent from its expatriates in the United States. Oh, yeah. All those illegals that come up here, they're sending buku buckos, baby, through Wells Fargo. And other, well, not Wells Fargo, what is it? Western Union. The donors apparently grow fonder of Mexico the more they are safely distanced from it. You see, America could close the border tomorrow. They could actually make Mexico pay for the wall by simply slapping a 10% export tax on all remittances sent to Mexico. Or we could make it illegal to send money out of the country if one is receiving federal subsidies and aid. Or we could fine employers for hiring those who are here illegally. Oh, wait a minute. There are such fines. But they stopped collecting them years ago. Of course, also as a deterrent to the future illegal entries, we could immediately deport all who illegally entered and reside in the United States if they came within the last 5 years, or if they have a criminal record, or if they are not working and are on public assistance. The result would not just be a restoration of American sovereignty and a decline in spiraling social service costs. There would follow better relations with Latin America and Mexico. Both treat us with contempt as a hectoring weakling because, well, unlike themselves, we do not believe in our own physical space. We don't believe in our own borders, our freedom to do as we please rather than what others tell us to do. And look abroad. Our allies and neutrals are distracting themselves from America. France, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, India, Turkey, South Korea, all because of the Ukraine war. And China. And the dollar is the global currency. And our popular culture. We spoke at length about the dollar as the so-called global currency yesterday. Why is all this going on? Our increasingly former friends concluded it is now dangerous to ally openly with the United States for a variety of reasons. Number one, they see the once indomitable United States as weak, as a possible liability rather than an asset. After China's balloon surveillances, the Afghanistan flight, the inability to achieve strategic victory after intervening in Iraq and Libya, the current embarrassing Pentagon leak, the Anchorage mini summit, the woke obsessions in the U.S. military, and the inability to ensure its military is well staffed. The inability to ensure its military is well staffed. Well, part of that goes back to the woke obsession. Never mind. Apolitical. Equipped with the world's most plentiful and cutting-edge weaponry, allies assume that the United States will not necessarily win any intervention it undertakes, but may well drag them down with it. Secondly, the United States may suddenly turn on an ally, demonize it, refuse to meet with its leaders as Biden gratuitously maligns Saudi Arabia and Israel. And number three, America asks the allies to join its cause of the day, regardless of whether it's in those nations' own best interest. And so we've reached the point that South Korea, Japan, India, or Egypt do not believe that boycotting Russian oil or openly selling Ukraine weapons is necessarily in their best interest. And, of course, we've got our woke revolution. It's so volatile, irrational, unpredictable that allies never know when they'll be accused of being homophobic or transphobic or racist or sexist or treated accordingly, or whether the United States will be eternally crippled by internal woke dissension and civil unrest. Number five, our allies do not believe the United States can keep secrets, especially after the latest leak. From the Dobbs draft leak and the Comey leak of a confidential conversation with Trump to the Vindman Ciaramella Schiff impeachment psychodrama leaks to Chelsea Manning and Edward Snowden, leakers and whistleblowers feel that there's few consequences to leaking classified information unless it's embarrassing to leftist administrations, or indeed leaking to the media to overturn institutions and presidencies. My friends, America must reform the entire Pentagon process of spending and appropriations. It must end woke and identity politics, ideological indoctrination, return to a meritocracy. It should prohibit retiring generals and admirals from revolving into defense contractor boards and lobbyists. It should finally enforce the Uniform Code of Military Justice that prohibits active and retired high-ranking officers from publicly attacking their current commander-in-chief. It should charge leakers with felonies and prosecute perjury. Had the government done that with Andrew McCabe and John Brennan and James Comey and James Clapper, the accruing deterrence would have discouraged others with lower profiles. Well, my friends, Biden is on schedule to run up a $2 trillion annual deficit, adhering to the Bush, Obama, and Trump legacy of unfettered spending. But in Biden's case, he insanely printed over $4 trillion at a time when labor participation rates were already in decline, and COVID suppressed demand was returning, and transportation and production interruptions were reducing supply. Then Biden raised taxes and increased regulations and cut projected increases in gas and oil production, canceled energy projects. And the result has been the highest inflation in 40 years. Near record energy costs, soaring interest rates, the largest modern percentage of debt to GDP at 130%. The greatest debt in our history at $33 trillion. And a stagnant gross domestic product. All of that and more prompt the current Chinese-led effort to dethrone the dollar as the world's currency. We don't need to help China. We need to help ourselves. The remedies, my friends, are agreed upon, but the needed medicine is feared more than disease. Our elected leaders know we must, but never even attempt to cut spending, reduce the size of the federal government radically, Simplify the tax code, reduce taxes, deregulate, recalibrate Medicare and Social Security. Develop our mineral, gas, and oil resources. Require labor participation for able-bodied entitlement receipts. Or is that recipients? Never have Americans spent more on kindergarten through 12 and higher education. Never have they received less in return. The education industry is woke, non-meritocratic. Research is diverted, sidetracked, polluted by ideological commissars, endangering the U.S. lead in science and math and engineering in the professions. Even scientists have become deductive, starting out with a preconceived woke conclusion that they feel will win influence and grants and notoriety, and then scrambling to warp evidence to fit it. My friends, the solutions are straightforward. Tax university endowment income, and lots of superfluous and harmful programs will vanish. Stop federal loan, student loan guarantees, and soaring tuition and room and board costs will decline to the annual rate of inflation once universities must guarantee their own student loans. Require universities that receive federal funds of any sort to honor existing laws from the Bill of Rights to the 1964 Civil Rights Act. That would end segregated dorms and graduations. The next time administrators at Stanford or San Francisco State either aid or ignored student efforts to shout down or disrupt speakers and suppress free expression, their institutions should quickly be fined by the U.S. government or have their federal funding yanked. If SAT and ACT entrance tests are being abolished, then they could be rebooted as exit tests required for a bachelor's degree analogous to a bar exam. And with such minimum standards, we might ascertain what, if anything, students have learned upon graduation. College grads should be able to choose between an academic master's degree or the School of Education credentials to teach K through 12. And yet most would flee the latter option. Right to teach laws and the end of mandatory teacher union dues, along with the end of tenure and its replacement by five-year contracts with required minimum standards of achievement, would all bring some accountability to what is now an entirely unaccountable profession. And race? It's no longer an accurate barometer of either victimhood or legitimate grievance. If affirmative action were to continue, it would be based entirely on class considerations. Not the current system of Elizabeth Warren-esque fakery or delusions that the elite children of Eric Holder and the Obamas and the Duchess of Sussex or LeBron James are in some need of compensatory privilege for college admissions or appointments or hiring. Because you see, America is now multiracial, with untold ethnic and racial agendas and countless and contorted collective grievances. It is impossible to sort out victimizers and victims. Junk the entire illiberal and patently illegal system of racial discrimination. There would be no organic return to merit. And with it, race would become incidental, not essential to American identities. After 1964, it seems that Orwellian, that liberal institutions could continue to assign dorms by race and segregate graduations and impose racial requisites to participate in special programs. My friends, America's former strength, the most transparent, accurate, and trustworthy elections in the world, have descended into its greatest liability. In the space of a mere 8 years, and especially in reaction to radical political changes made under the cover of the COVID lockdown, we've gone from 70% of the electorate in most states voting on election day to a mere 30%. And yet the ballot rejection rate somehow diminished. With the flood of non-election day ballots that overwhelmed accustomed audit and verification. Election night is today a mere construct. It's mostly meaningless. Local, state, and federal election results are stalled and descend into days and weeks and sometimes even months of bickering, countercharges of ballot tampering and fraud, ballot harvesting and curing, and a loss of confidence in the integrity of the final result. Debates mean little anymore, once a large portion of the electorate has already voted. No wonder deceased candidates can win. Gaffes are now determined by whether they occur before or after the majority of voters have cast their ballots. My friends, there should be a national uniform standard that allows states to set their ballot procedures as long as they result in 70% of the electorate voting in person on election day. You know, back in the day, if you had to cast your vote on election day from out of state because you were traveling in your business or whatever the case may happen to be, you had to apply for the right to do that. America today is in a similar position to where it was in 1861, 1921, 1941, I'm sorry, 1929, 1941, and 1968. Only perhaps worse, given that in all those cases, there was at least a president and Congress that identified and reacted to crises. Whereas today, our elected government is what caused the crisis. These are things to give serious consideration to. That's what I've just shared with you was written and published yesterday by Victor Davis Hanson. Very interesting man, an interesting writer. A man who can sit back and see the reality for what it is. I thought that it was a good combination and a follow-up to the words of Charles Dickens, which we did during the first half of this program tonight. What we face, my friends, is not good. There's a piece we published over on Sierra Madre, Precious Metals, last night. It's not so much a column per se, but a series of quotes. It's entitled Brood of Vipers and Dead People Walking. In so many respects, they're probably a perfect follow-up to that which we've just shared. One of the quotes from Fyodor Dostoevsky. He stated that what is offensive is that they lie and worship their own lying. Now think about that in terms of that which we've just talked about in this program tonight. Frank Herbert. All governments suffer a recurring problem. Power attracts pathological personalities. It is not that power corrupts, but that it is magnetic to the corruptible. Such people have a tendency to become drunk on violence, a condition to which they are quickly addicted. Edmund Burke. Sin has many tools, but a lie is the handle which fits them all. Hannah Arendt, interesting commentary. Hannah says the temporary alliance between the elite and the mob rested largely on this genuine delight with which the former watched the latter destroy respectability. To its conviction that history, which was a forgery anyway, must be added the terrible demoralizing fascination, the possibility that the difference between truth and falsehood may cease to be objective and become a mere matter of power and cleverness, of pressure and infinite repetition. not Stalin's and Hitler's skill in the art of lying, but the fact that they were able to organize the masses into a collective unit to back up their lies with impressive magnificence. God, that says so much. So, so much. I look at these quotes. It's profound. Cynthia Matthews says that three dark personalities, narcissism, Machiavellianism, and psychopathy have been studied in business. And all the first two share similar traits with psychopathy, such as superficial charm, lying and manipulation, the inability to accept responsibility for their actions, and the complete lack of empathy, guilt, and humility. A large body of research has demonstrated that psychopathic individuals are more dishonest, treacherous, and destructive than the others. And while all three dark personalities can be bad news for a company, corporate psychopathy is the most dangerous. There is so much here. So, so much. Simone Weil closes by saying, evil, when we are in its power, is not felt as evil, but as a necessity, or even a duty. So why do the nations rage, and their people entertain vanities? The kings of the earth rise up, and rulers gather together against the Lord and his anointed. Serve the Lord with fearful respect. Celebrate his rule with trembling, for his judgment can strike in a moment. Blessed are all who take refuge in him. Psalms 2. I think we've said enough for one night. There's been much to absorb within this past hour. Strongly recommend you go back and grab a copy of this program tonight. Listen through it again. Lord willing, I'll see you tomorrow night. God bless and good night.
I'll keep my freedom. I'll keep my guns. Try to keep my money and my religion too. Try to keep on working. Try to keep on smiling. I will keep my Christian name and y'all can keep the change. I'll keep my heroes' pictures on the wall. I'll keep my family safe. You bluff and I'll call. I'm gonna keep my big V8, keep my friends the same. Keep the government out of my business and y'all can keep the change. This country sure as hell been going down the drain. We know what we need. We know who to blame. United Socialist States of America. How do you like that name? I'll keep the USA and y'all can keep the change. And friends want to put me down, ask for my opinion, then twist it all around. Supposed to be talking about my father's new CD. Well, two can play that gotcha game, just wait and see. Don't tread on me. This country sure as hell been going down the drain. We know what we need. We know who to blame. Socialist States of America. Don't you just love that name? I'll keep the USA and y'all can keep the change. I'll keep the USA and y'all can keep the change. keep Fox and Friends and ESPN out of your homes, too. Because Bo Cephas and all his rowdy friends and his song is out of there.
Are you going to wait till the cows come home to get your new Ease-Off drop-in lift?
What in the world is an Ease-Off drop-in lift?
Our Ease-Off is a new tool to increase production for your meat processing company that will get that whole hog or half a beef on or off your rail with our remote control.
That sounds great, but can I afford it?
Sure, and the Ease-Off installs fast. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue, speed up your line, and increase profits.
Okay, I'm convinced. Where can I get my Ease-Off?
Go to easeoff.com. That's EAZEOFF.com. And hurry, because we're offering free shipping for a limited time. Easeoff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
Ease-Off LLC, 417-932-6419.
You're listening to Real Talk Radio. Only on the Republic Broadcasting Network.